Good morning, buenos dias. Thank you for having me this morning. I'm very happy to be here to present and share with you the research that I've been doing now, maybe the past 3 years. And so I don't have any relationships or conflicts to disclose. Just a show of hands from the from the audience. How many of you are aware that obesity is classified as a disease? Okay. All right. So we know really a lot of research supports that obesity is related to almost everything we can think of. And so it's no surprise that obesity is a major emphasis in our public health efforts to prevent and treat obesity, childhood obesity especially, because we are seeing that our children are gaining weight across the lifespan. And we also see that there are disparities in obesity. And so these are a bit older data, but the trends really are still persistent nowadays, where you see that Mexican-American, non-Hispanic, Black have a higher prevalence of obesity compared to white. So really, I think in my research, I've really started to question, are we being efficient at targeting obesity as a primary outcome in our efforts? And when you look at the trends and when you look at the data, the national data, we've been investing quite a bit of time and resources now, maybe the last 20, 25 years in obesity prevention in many groups, adults and children. And what you see from the data is that there is some tapering off lately of obesity, and there is even some slight reductions in the prevalence of obesity among different groups. And these data show that among low-income preschool children, there is a slight decrease. And again, if you look at the numbers here, it's at least from my perspective, it's not very dramatic. Again, despite how much efforts we put into this. And when you look at the literature and you review the interventions, there are many interventions, many different types of approaches. Some interventions do show small short-term effects, but very few show long-term and sustainable effects on obesity, on BMI. And so this is the question that I ask myself a lot in my research. I've been involved in some large grants, R01s, where BMI is the primary outcome. I've been very disappointed. And so in my approach, I really started to question this. Are we barking up the wrong tree? And so when we look at data, and this is just a snapshot, there are strong data out there. This is just one data set here. So when you look at men, and this is risk for cardiovascular disease mortality, and this is a large epidemiological study, there are several out there that support these same findings. You see that across every weight category, normal weight, overweight, and obese, it appears that the major determinant of disease and risk of mortality is fitness level. And so, again, this is not new, but yet we are still designing interventions to only target BMI changes. What happens when we look at kids? Pretty much the same story. It's not perfectly the same, but you see here, this is cardiovascular disease risk scores in children, and you have males and females in these graphs, and you see that those that are high fat and low fit have, if you will, the highest risk. But even among high fat children who are high fit, they have a dramatic drop in those risk factors. Okay, so again, we see this in adults and we see this in children. Downside to focusing on BMI, BMI, most of us know that is not a very good measure of body composition. So body weight and body fat are correlated, but that's not the same thing. Body size is related to cultural norms. Different populations have different ideas about what is the body size and ideal body weight. And so I've done research where we ask parents to classify their children, and most of the time they are incorrect, and especially if their child is overweight and obese. And so some have taken the approach to then try to correct those misperceptions with the idea being that if you correct those misperceptions, they are aware that there's a problem, and then therefore they will act upon that problem and engage in lifestyle changes. There's also a risk of stigmatizing children for their weight. So I've been involved in several studies, and I can think of a few instances, and one in particular where one of our staff members asked the child, you know, do you enjoy this program? And it was a lifestyle intervention. And the child said, yeah, you know, this is fun. We're learning about nutrition and physical activity. And they asked the child, too, do you know why you're in the program? The child said, yes, it's because I'm fat. And so, you know, we might be inadvertently be sending that message or stigmatizing children. You know, if we enroll participants who are all of the same sort of weight, they know why we're targeting them. Upside of promoting fitness, fitness is strongly related to health outcomes, very, very strongly, independent of body weight, so you can be fit and fat. Fitness does not have necessarily preconceived negative connotations in populations. Like when you think of fitness, you know, you might not think of that as, you know, that's culturally bound, or there's some ideas behind that already. Parents are receptive to improving their children's fitness, independent of their child's body weight, whatever that is. And fitness can improve quickly and substantially. So having said all that, so we designed a study that focused on improving cardiovascular fitness, physical activity, and dietary behaviors, not BMI. And we called our study and our program Athletes for Life. So this project, this program, is a collaboration, a very strong community collaboration. So I reached out to a community clinic and the Parks and Recreation Department to share with them, you know, these are some potential ideas that I have, but what do you think about, you know, what types of programs or what types of interventions or strategies we can use to address the problem of children's health, not children's obesity. And so we set out to try to design a program that, from the very beginning, we were thinking about sustainability. And so my collaborators, one of the first things they told me is, well, we don't have the resources to implement a new program or hire staff to implement a new program or to evaluate the program. So they charged me to put together the resources so that this would be doable. And so I created, as part of this program, internship opportunities for our students, and our students are very excited to be involved in this type of work. And so that was one of the major sort of elements that allowed this collaboration to continue, because I was not going to a community partner asking them to put their resources and more efforts and more time and more money for what appeared to be a nice idea. And so everybody had a stake in this project. So I will share with you the results of two studies. One is the pilot study, and then the results of an ongoing study. And so I will share with you the preliminary results of that study. And so the overall goal is to create sustainable community programs that provide physical activity opportunities for all children. So the pilot study was a 6-week study. I always tell people that, you know, you don't need a long time to find out if something's not going to work. So, you know, 6 weeks to test it out for feasibility and acceptability. And we were looking at children's fitness, physical activity, and dietary outcomes. So very small in scale, again, just proof of concept, trying to test and see what the participants thought about the program, get their feedback, and also see if there was, you know, any signal. You know, are we getting anything that might be supporting changes? So we had parents and children participate in a 6-week program, once a week for 90 minutes, and there were behavioral goals to increase physical activity and dietary behaviors, but we were focusing on increasing fitness in children. Most of the children that participate in our studies are not children that are engaging in a lot of sports, so they do benefit from learning how to throw a ball, kick a ball, and then we're thinking that this is an important step to then engage in more physical activity and in sports. So these are the list of the different measures. We chose to have a field measures of fitness as opposed to, you know, a VO2 max. And so these are pretty good and reliable measures of fitness. So we also measured height, waist circumference, and a few other measures. So the results of this pilot study, most of the adult participants were women. 79%, you know, identified as Latino, 89% classified below, living below the federal poverty line. And you see here that there's a pretty high prevalence of a chronic disease or chronic conditions. 83% of the parents being classified as overweight and obese, and you see there the data for the children. So in 6 weeks, what did we see? So in 6 weeks, we saw that for the adults, weight, I would say, is stabilized. You know, it's not much of a difference, 77 kilograms compared to 76, and this is just a pre-post design. BMI, same thing, you know, a slight drop maybe. When you look at children, their waist circumference did not appear to change. Height, so they got taller, that's good. Weight. When you look here at weight, that's expected. Kids are growing, so they will gain some weight. But when you look at BMI, BMI percentile, BMI Z-score, again, we're not seeing a whole lot. So I didn't set out to do this, but it kind of supports the idea if we focus on BMI as an outcome, we would call this study a failure, right? Second look. So now when we look at the fitness data show, again, this is just pre-post, push-ups, the number of push-ups they can do went up. You know, we would only be so happy to have these effect sizes when we're doing research and BMI is the outcome, you know, an effect size, a standardized effect size of 1.2. Not all these parameters changed, so sit-ups did not change, sit and reach. When you look at speed, so this was a 20-yard dash, they got faster. And a half-mile run, they also got faster. So, and they were happy to see that. Yeah. So this is the current study. Those pilot data led to the current study. The current study is now funded by the American Heart Association, and this is now a 12-week intervention. So we did go bigger, broader, heavier on the evaluation and also on the intervention. Our target is to enroll 160 families, and this is a study for 4 years. And I'm presenting data today of the first cohort that completed the intervention. Randomized control trial with an intervention group and a wait list control group. In community interventions, this is important. People are not happy to know they're randomized to a control group where they don't receive anything. So a wait list control group appears to be something that's feasible. So twice a week now, 12 weeks, 90-minute sessions delivered in the community center. If you look at the inclusion criteria, this is open to just about everybody. Adults 18 years and older, and children 6 to 11. The reason we selected this age group is when you look at physical activity in adolescence, it plummets. So from a prevention standpoint, this is, I think, a good age group to target so that they engage in those physical activity behaviors. So this is the intervention. So we did intervene with the parents and we did intervene with the children. We had a component specifically designed for the parents and specifically for the children. And those two components also interacted with each other. But in essence, we did have nutrition education and we did have sports-oriented and fitness-oriented classes for the adults. It was open to all family members. That's also important to note. And for the children, we know their attention span is a little shorter, so it was just 10 minutes of a very short and simple nutrition education classes. And the rest of the classes was physical activity, learning how to throw a ball, how to dribble a basketball, things like that. And so we did have also several aspects of behavioral modification. And the program ended with an Olympics event. And so that was one way to give participants something to look forward to. And also it was something to as a social support component. We did get fancy with the measures. So standard stuff in terms of survey, measured BMI, waist circumference. And then with this particular study, we are measuring a much better measure of body composition with DEXA. A fitness, a 1 mile run, and a 3 minute step test. These are field measures that are doable. We are drawing blood to look at cardiovascular disease risk factors, both in the children and the adults. And you know, we're doing a few other things related to the home food environment, physical activity with accelerometry. And so these are a lot of different data that we are collecting, but just today I will focus on the data that I'm presenting on, which is the fitness data and the anthropometric data. The other data will hopefully be presented at a future conference. So, preliminary results, 33 families enrolled. Pretty good retention rates, 85%. You look here at some of the demographics. All right, so here we are. When we look at BMI, so these are data at post, adjusting for baseline. So this is comparing the intervention group at post compared to the control group at post adjusting for baseline. So what we see here is that BMI is very similar between both groups. Yeah, after this, there is a slight trend in terms of the intervention group having a lower BMI. When you look at BMI percentile, that doesn't look different. Waist circumference doesn't look different. Interestingly, body composition is different. So the intervention group had a 1% difference or lower body composition than the control group. So again, we would not see this if we're looking at BMI. And if you look at the 1 mile run times and the step test heart rate, so this is heart rate during the step test, so this is a physiologic response, you do see favorable improvements or favorable parameters in the intervention compared to the control group. You can argue whether 0.05 is or isn't significant, but you know the data support that is happening, that these are important changes. So in conclusion, we do need community academic collaborations because that's what allows us to be able to implement programs that participants actually like and enjoy, and the collaborators are heavily invested in these programs. So I just listed there the types of collaborations we would benefit from. And a few things, take home messages, I guess, I think reinforcing the idea about BMI. And we do need to consider testing more of these types of interventions, I think. And so I have a few pictures, but since we ran out of time, I can share with these maybe later. Okay, questions?